First public hearing is conditional use number 1862, Nanny Coke Shores Associates LLC.
This is an application to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district to replace 260 mobile home lots with 367 seasonal RV camper sites to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 138 acres, more or less, lying at the northeast of Long Neck Road, being Route 22, 1 mile east of Potnatch Road, being Route 22C. To date, the commission has received an exhibit booklet from the applicant. It was received on January 3rd of 2011 for the purpose of the record and has been in possession of the file since January 3rd. The exhibit booklet contains a history of Rehoboth Shores, a copy of the application form, an area map, a copy of a portion of the Beer's Atlas for the area, a copy of the plus review comments and the applicant's response, a traffic analysis, references to water and sewer availability, a wetlands report, a rare, threatened, and endangered species report, a forestry report, references to compliance with the environmentally sensitive developing district overlay zone, proposed rules and regulations for the proposed campground, photographs of amenities, a copy of a presentation to the Rehoboth Shores residents in fall of 2010, letters in support, and excuse me, I'm one of the ones I forgot to turn
my phone off. Mr. Lank.
Give me the phone.
Have the council almost every week.
Nice.
That's the first time in 15 years that's happened.
No, I have the council all the time. And for some reason, my vibrator is not working. Sorry about that.
I hope that's not an indication of how the evening's going to go.
Might be. Where was I? I'm sorry. In letters of support and suggested proposed findings of fact and suggested proposed conditions. We've also received a conceptual drawing of Rehoboth Shores depicting the location of proposed bathhouses and a floor plan for a bathhouse. Which were received, and I don't believe the commissioners have a copy of that. I will pass that down.
Anyone coming?
DelDOT did provide comments. I'm sorry.
That's right. Go ahead.
On February 5th of 2010, in reference to this application, it references that a traffic impact study was not recommended, that the level of service D of Long Neck Road will not change as a result of this application. We also received comments from the County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division on January 6th of 2011, and which referenced that the site is located in the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District, that wastewater capacity is available for the project, that Ordinance 38 construction will be required, that the current system connection charge rate is $3,472 per equivalent dwelling unit, that potential gravity connection points are available within the existing Rehoboth Shores community, that the proposal is to replace 260 previously approved lots currently vacant and undeveloped within the existing Rehoboth Shores community with 367 seasonal RV camper sites, that the proposed use equates to an estimated SOAR assessment of 91.75 equivalent dwelling units, that the connection to the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District is mandatory, that the county requires design and construction of the collection and transmission system to meet County Engineering Department requirements and procedures, that the county engineer must approve the connection points, that a SOAR concept plan must be submitted for review and approval prior to any SOAR connection, that conformity to the North Coastal Area Planning Study will be required, that a test and evaluation of the county's existing pump station within the Rehoboth Shores community is required, and the purpose of that is to identify current deficiencies and determine upgrades that might be required for existing and proposed conditions for the station to meet current standards and specifications, that the evaluation must address all aspects of the station, including SCADA and PLC instrumentation, three-phase power, emergency power, and flood elevation, that testing and upgrades would be performed by the developer at the developer's expense, that the developer must coordinate with the county to evaluate the pump station, and that a contact person will be identified at the appropriate time, and that a concept plan will be required. The Sussex Conservation District also provided comments on February 16th, 2011, and that reference that the site contains 9 soil types, that the applicant will be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during construction and to maintain vegetation, that no storm flood hazard areas are affected, that no off-site drainage improvements will be necessary, that it is not likely that on-site drainage improvements will be necessary, and that no tax ditches are affected. We also received, in addition to letters in support documented in the exhibit booklet, we received a letter from William Jack Riddle in support and referencing that the application should be approved, that he has spent summers growing up in Long Neck Road working in the mobile home RV parks, and has noted that RV tenants take pride in their units and their surrounding properties, that several RV parks in the county have been lost, that the proposed lots will bring quality tourists back into the area as well as provide important economic benefits, that he has spent the last 25 years in the county doing business with campground owners, and notes that good operators bring in good tenants, which have a favorable impact on the community. And we also receive letters and emails in support, have been received in opposition, and those letters are from Dorothy Boucher, Gregory Wagman, Calvin P. Campbell and Elaine Campbell, Susan Biro, Dennis Faber, and Lou DeLizio. And those letters referenced, and this is a summation of those letters. While I'm reading, I will summarize, I will pass down copies of all the letters to the commission. Those letters reference that manufactured housing communities are communities where people live and raise their families, that manufacturing housing is one of the last truly affordable opportunities for housing left in the county, that the median income in the county is below the median housing cost levels, questioning why would it be okay for 260 more affordable home sites to be lost to residents, that homeowners in the county have rights that the county is obligated to protect, that allowing campers and RVs to become a part of a housing community is not acceptable, and even the county code would not support this type of transition, that homeowners care about their homes, their neighbors, their families, and their communities, that most of the homeowners live here, many more will eventually retire to live here, and we expect our communities to be protected from temporary part-time passer-throughs who have no regard for their temporary living area, that our serenity is threatened, our peace of mind would be eliminated, and our security would be in danger, that there is nothing wrong with campers and RVs, but they belong in parks on sites that are intended from the start to answer their needs and requirements, not in a community where lives are lived on a permanent basis, that a covenant exists between park owners and homeowners. They get wealthy on our lot rent and are expected to provide us with certain amenities, including a safe and secure place to put our homes, that the homeowners are not responsible for economic hardships, and we should not have our world turned upside down because of any financial problems that may spring up, that the entire situation is not of the homeowners' making, but we will be the ones to see our lives destroyed if the county allows this type of land use change, asking that the county or the commission put themselves in our place, whether living in a dwelling or a manufactured home. What would happen to you and your family and your life if one day you woke up, walked outside to the mailbox, and there was an RV parked on the empty lot next door? The manufactured homes can be moved, but they will never be the same as previously placed. Announcing for the sake of tens of thousands of manufactured homeowners in the county that it would be the greatest mistake the Planning and Zoning Commission would ever make if this application was approved, and requesting denial of the application. The traffic is already heavy during the season, and approval of this request would cause traffic to be uncontrollable. Questioning if water and sewer capacity can handle the increase, that home invasion is a concern, questioning what this increase of activity would bring, questioning if utilities would be upgraded, that the residents are already experiencing a reduced water flow issue in summer months, questioning if roads will be upgraded to handle the surplus of cars that will be traveling on Long Neck Road, since problems already impact getting to the grocery store, church, etc., due to the backup between Massey's Landing and Route 24. Questioning if additional police will be assigned to the area due to concerns about increased crime, referencing a fear of a precedent being set for more changes from manufactured home parks to campgrounds. The manufactured home communities with long-term and full-time residents should not morph into transient parks. Questioning why anyone would want to mix and match permanent homes in this tax base with seasonal transient vehicles instead of creating more efficient parks for the RVs. Requesting that the commission consider the precedents and repercussions of such an important decision, and that the proposed use could be a burden on the infrastructure in the area, and again requesting denial of the application. And that's the basic summary of those comments. And that's all I have at this time.
All right, so we thank you, Mr. Link. All right then, Mr. Byard, may proceed.
Good evening, gentlemen. Gene Byard for the applicant, Nanticoke Shores Associates. With me this evening are one of the owners, Richard Berman, the general manager of Rehoboth Shores, who also serves as the general manager of Tall Pines, David Podlasic, and the project engineer, Byron Jeffers. I know there are a number of people who want to be heard. We'll go as fast as we can. As Lawrence pointed out, this project is unusual because it proposes a new development of an approved but undeveloped 260-lot section of an existing mobile home community. All public infrastructure is already in place. As you'll see in the project booklet when we get to it, DLDOT has determined that there is less traffic impact created by the development of a seasonal RV park campground than by the development of the already approved 260-lot mobile home section of Rehoboth Shores. Years ago, the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District allocated 260 EDUs, or equivalent dwelling units, to serve the undeveloped 260 lots. If a campground RV park is developed, that number of EDUs will be cut in half, or more than half, leaving those EDUs to be consumed elsewhere in the sewer district. Rehoboth Shores is already served by the Long Neck Water Company, and the result of all of this is that according to DLDOT and the county, the impact of this development will be less than the development of a 260-lot addition to the mobile home community of Rehoboth Shores. With that, I'd ask Byron Jefferson to come up to the podium. Byron, if you will, could you introduce yourself to the commission and describe your credentials briefly?
My name is Byron Jefferson with Byron Jefferson's Engineering Services from Lincoln, Delaware. I've been a registered professional engineer since 1973. Have we designed a lot of campground, sewer, water-related subdivisions.
Can you describe some of the campgrounds in Sussex County you've been involved with?
A partial list of the campgrounds we've designed sewer and water systems include Metz's Campground, Cedar Creek Campground, Gulls Way Campground, Brumley's Campground, Homestead Campground, Big Oaks Campground, Spring Hill Campground, Eagle's Nest Campground, Smith Landing Campground, and Pine Tree Campground.
I believe that's enough. Can you go to the board on the easel and briefly describe the neighborhood surrounding the proposed project site?
The area shown in yellow is the area we're talking about for the campsite. Surrounding it immediately is other lands of Rehoboth Shores, the mobile home community, existing developed portion of the Rehoboth Shores. Beyond that, to the northwest, we have some swamp wetlands, agricultural land of Ellen Burton family. Going across the road, the Burton family land continues. And further, we have the tunnel company's maintenance yard and some other land of tunnel companies that's in woods now. We have a Presbyterian church next to the tunnel property. We have the Lobset Herring Landing, mobile home community directly across the road, directly across Long Neck Road. We have a single family residence on Long Neck Road, just southeast of the site. And then we have some more agricultural land and the Bayview Bay City mobile home community and some empty marshland.
Would it be accurate to say that the predominant zoning classification is AR1 with a conditional use on top of it?
That's correct.
As a part of this project, did you make an application to PLUS? For the audience, that's the Preliminary Land Use Service?
Yes, I did.
And what was the result of that application and that meeting?
We have addressed all of the concerns that PLUS brought up, either in the application or responding to PLUS. One in particular, DelDOT had determined after subsequent meetings with them that their traffic flow would be decreased from this change if we had the 367 recreational seasonal camper lots.
Ladies and gentlemen, excuse me, you will be given an opportunity to speak at the appropriate time. Please allow these gentlemen to put on their case, and as soon as they're done, you're up.
Archie, go ahead.
Thank you. The 260 mobile home sites that are undeveloped would create more traffic than the seasonal campsites we're proposing to replace them. And as a result of that, DelDOT would not require any improvements to the existing entrance. It was improved in, I believe it was 93, and they believe that that's sufficient. It looks in good condition. And the only recommendations they made for changes was that we provide another office further away from the entrance so that campers aren't stopping near the entrance, and some signing changes.
Gentlemen, for your reference, if you look at tab F in the project booklet, the conclusion of DelDOT is that this project would work a net reduction of 21 average daily trips and does not require additional DelDOT permits. Entrance improvement plans approved in 1993 accounted for a greater number of total site average daily trips than presently proposed. And that's the author of that is John Fiore of the planning section of DelDOT. Byron, as a part of this project, was a wetlands evaluation performed?
Yeah, McCarthy and Associates evaluated the wetlands. There are the only wetlands on site are around a small dug pond, which are not affected by this development. There are 404 wetlands inside the site, but they're not affected by what we're doing. And they're shown on the plans.
Was a forest or timber evaluation done for the site?
Yes, on tab J in the booklet are the results of that forest stand delineation done by Parker Forestry Service. And a summary of it shows that there's 1 9-acre mixed hardwood stand. Most of that stand was harvested about 30 years ago, regenerated on its own. It's the typical upland pine hardwood forest that can be found anywhere in Sussex County, and there are no rare or extraordinary trees found or identified. I was quoting parts of the study.
Speaking of rare and extraordinary, was a rare, threatened, and endangered species report done?
Yes, and you see in tab I of the report, there's the rare endangered species were examined by JCM, Environmental Subdivision of Landmark Engineering, and to quote a paragraph in the conclusions, and they say the results of the habitat assessment survey indicate that no federally rare, threatened, or endangered species or their habitats are present within the Rehoboth Shores property.
Can you go to the site plan, Byron? I've got some questions for you. Under Section 115, Section 172H of County Code, a buffer is required around the perimeter of the planned community. Can you point out that buffer and tell me what it is?
Yes, we've got it. We've got all of the areas to be forested in greens. As the buffer, I'll trace it around. We're thicker here. All that's not required buffer, but it's still forested. And then buffer around this portion.
Mm-hmm. And what's the minimum necessary width of that buffer?
It's 50 feet.
What plans for landscaping or plantings have been made to date?
We filed a preliminary plan drawing there with the application. We plan to populate it with indigenous species of trees and shrubs, and populate it so it screens both directions. Screens so the campers aren't troubled with what they see inside and the other way around.
Yeah. What about gates and fencing? Is there any plan or provision for gates and fencing?
Yes, we plan to fence around the entire border, the entire perimeter buffer zone area, and we plan to put gate access gates here and here to limit through traffic that's not for the campground. Mm-hmm.
Will there be bathhouses on the site?
We propose bathhouses for each of the two sections, one here and one here.
Mm-hmm. Will there be an on-site office for the project?
A separate office for the campground is proposed in this area.
Have you calculated the distance from any campsite to the nearest mobile home in the developed portion of Rehoboth Shores?
The distance from any campsite area to a mobile home lot is 50 feet to 100 feet. The smallest distance is 50 feet, that's through the 50-foot buffer, through the screen buffer. It's not, it's of course a little more than that to the actual home.
Is it your understanding that placement of a camper or an RV on an approved lot in a mobile home community is prohibited by county ordinance?
That's my understanding.
Let's talk about stormwater management. How have you addressed stormwater management for the project?
We've been using green practices. The stormwater will eventually be directed to tidal water, so there's not a problem with overloading or flooding any areas.
Are you confident as an engineer that stormwater issues will be resolved on site?
Yes, they will resolve them on site.
You're familiar with County Ordinance 115, Section 172H. Is this project compliant with that ordinance?
Yes, it is.
Are all campsites and RV sites the proper size?
They are the proper size.
And proper provision has made for utility infrastructure?
That's correct.
I'm going to ask you a question you're going to have to talk about for a little bit, and that's compliance with the requirements of the county's environmentally sensitive developing district overlay zone. Can you walk the commission through this project's compliance?
In tab K of the booklet, we try to address each of these areas. Natural and historic features, there are none identified. Minimal use of wetlands and floodplains. We are not intruding at any wetlands. The floodplains are identified on the plans. Open space and scenic areas. We're providing more than 39% open area and buffering and visual screening between the campsites and the adjacent mobile home sites and property. Minimization of tree vegetation, soil removal, and grade change as much as possible. We don't want to change any of that because it would the more trees we can leave, the better camping environment it will be. Screening, we've already mentioned how we provide, will provide planted landscape screening in the buffer areas. Provision for water supply, Long Neck Water Company serves the existing mobile home park, and their service will be extended and upgraded as necessary to supply this area also. Provision for sewage disposal, the EDUs allocated for campsites are typically one-third that of mobile home dwellings. Therefore, by replacing the 260 mobile homes with 367 seasonal campsites, now you'll see 371 showing up several places in the paperwork. There were drawings and thoughts of doing 371, but the applications for 367 and 367 is what's being applied for. Therefore, replacing the 260 mobile homes with 367 seasonal campsites, that will free up more than 130 EDUs dedicated to this project, which can be used for other projects. Surface and groundwater pollution prevention. We have nothing is proposed for this site, which should create a concern for groundwater pollution. Erosion, sediment, stormwater management. We mentioned that a minute ago. We will comply, and all plans will be approved by Sussex Conservation District. Safe vehicular and pedestrian mobility. We reuse the existing highway entrance on Long Neck Road. No new entrance be required. We're reducing the traffic flow. We will provide nature walkways around the buffer area through the wooded area. Effect on area property values. Replacing undeveloped mobile home lots with screened campsites should have no negative effect on area property values. Preservation and conservation of farmland. No portion of the proposed development area or any portion of the Rehoboth Shores community is currently farmland or has been farmed in the recent past. Effects on schools, public building, and community facilities. We see no change. The seasonal campground should have no effect on the schools and little effect on public buildings. Effect on area roadways and public transportation. DLDOT's not requiring a traffic impact study. DLDOT agrees that this would reduce the flow. This is comparing 367 new campsites to 260, for developing the 260 mobile home site. The camping trailers may remain on the premises year-round. They would not force them to move them off-site, but water service would be terminated during the off-season, and they would not be occupied. Compatibility with other area land uses. The Long Neck area has a mixture of commercial, residential, and recreational uses. This campground facility would blend well with other land uses in the area. Effect on area waterways. We see no adverse effect on area waterways. Economic and recreational benefits. 367 campsites are proposed in an area where no available campsite spaces currently exist. This in itself provides a recreational option which does not exist in the area. It also introduces seasonal visitors to the area who are likely to purchase from local retailers. And an overview of current site conditions, that we're just repeating what we've already stated.
Thank you. That's all I have of Byron. Unless there are questions now, I would call on David Colossi. Thanks, Byron. David, if you could, please identify yourself and explain your connection to Nanticoke Shores Associates.
My name is David Polosik, and I am the regional manager for Mid-Atlantic Shore Properties, which owns and operates Tall Pines Campground as well as Rehoboth Shores.
Can you give us a quick history of Rehoboth Shores as you know it?
Rehoboth Shores was purchased by the Bermans in the mid-1980s. Previous to that, it was also a mobile home community.
What about Tall Pines?
Tall Pines has been in its current location for over 40 years. Previously, it was known as Log Cabin Hill Campground, and we took it over in 1986. It was purchased by Mid-Atlantic Shore Properties, and this is our 25th year.
And what's the makeup of development at Tall Pines?
Tall Pines is a mixed mobile home and RV campground.
And what is the breakdown of RVs and campers as opposed to mobile homes?
We have 103 mobile homes and 480 seasonal RV sites.
And in your experience, 11 years plus, can RVs and campers and mobile homes community peacefully coexist?
Yes, they do. They do at Tall Pines. They already do on Long Neck Road at Leisure Point, which is a mixed mobile home and RV community. Oak Forest on Long Neck Road, which again is a mixed mobile home and RV community. And we have another campground, Big Oaks Campground, which is RVs and also mobile homes.
And where is Big Oaks located?
Big Oaks is located right off of Route 1.
I want you to talk briefly about market conditions in Rehoboth Shores, if you will. As of February 24, 2011, are there any vacant mobile home lots with water and sewer available for rent in Rehoboth Shores?
Yes, we have 80 mobile home sites available.
There are 80 vacant lots?
80 vacant lots.
And how many lots were the subject of a lease and placement of a new mobile home in the last several years?
In 2009, we leased only 3 lots. In 2010, we only leased 1 lot.
So in those 2 years, a total of 4 new homes and 4 lots were leased by the mobile home community?
Correct.
At that rate, you've got a supply for the next 40 years if the market doesn't improve. What investments in the last 2 years, given this lousy economy, has Rehoboth Shores made in the community?
We made a considerable investment in the community by purchasing repossessed homes that were in the community already. We purchased and are in the process of rehabilitating 30 repossessed homes. This is to, you know, keep the homes from leaving the property and maintaining the property's integrity. In addition to that, we purchased 35 surplus government mobile homes, new government mobile homes. They weren't FEMA RVs. We placed them on lots, and we're currently renting those out as well. In addition to that, we have frozen rents. We froze rents in 2010, and we have made no decision on what we're going to do in 2011 at this point.
Can you talk briefly about the state of the retail mobile home sales market as you know it?
The mobile home sales market in Sussex County has gone completely flat. In the last couple of years, we have lost upwards of 8 retail mobile home locations. Those retail mobile home companies that are out there who had multiple locations have had to consolidate their lots. Basically, there's very few new mobile homes on their sales lots at this time.
In your review of market conditions, what is the availability of credit for purchase of new mobile homes?
At this time, there are not a lot of lenders out there who are giving or lending to new mobile home owners on rented property.
Do you have an opinion about current market conditions and where they may be going?
Yes. I have. And was this given out?
I'll hand up a copy of what Mr. Colossi just prepared. Go ahead.
What I have prepared here is an analysis or a comparison between mobile homes purchases versus a stick-built home purchases. And what I've done here is I've taken on the mobile home side the average mean value of a mobile home, $40,000. The current interest rates anywhere from 14 to 18% and sometimes going up as high as 25%. So I've used 18% as the mean annual interest rate. Most mobile homes are financed for a period of 15 years. And we've calculated the total of their monthly payments coming out to $355.93. Add to that monthly lot rent payments in just Rehoboth Shores alone, that's $280 a month. You're looking at $635.93 a month just for a mobile home. For a stick-built house, mean price $175,000. The average interest rate for a stick-built home mortgage rate is 4%. The term of the loan is generally 30 years. And calculating that, you come out to a monthly payment of $716.82. What I find, and I'm no economist here, what I'm seeing here is that for just $80.89, a prospective home buyer can buy a stick-built home on a lot that builds equity over a mobile home lot, over a mobile home on a rented lot that doesn't appreciate in value. And given that information, we have no guarantee that lot rents are going to increase during that 15-year period of time. And we all know they do.
That's your unscientific opinion that mobile home tenants may be gravitating to permanent housing.
Yes, sir.
And that's not necessarily good for your business.
That's not good for manufactured housing business.
Did you make, on behalf of Rehoboth Shores, a presentation to the Homeowners Association?
Yes, we did. In October of 2010, we made a presentation to the, we invited all the residents of Rehoboth Shores to a presentation. We had a nice lunch that day. And if you would turn to section tab N in your presentation book, you'll see a copy of that presentation that was made, basically giving the information that we have presented this evening, showing what we propose to do, giving our thoughts on positive aspects, comparing it to what we currently have at Tall Pines Campground over in Lewis. Again, another, it would be a mixed community of RVs and mobile homes. Over the period of time, we've had no problems with a mixture of having RVs and mobile homes. We're proposing strictly a seasonal campsites, not transient.
Let me ask you a couple of questions about the project. What will be the months of operation?
We're proposing our months of operation to be April 1st to October 31st, at which time utilities will be shut off and no one would be allowed onto the sites.
Will there be rules and regulations for the campground?
Yes, we have proposed some rules and regulations under tab L in your project book. We have a listing of rules and regulations that we currently use at Tall Pines Campground. They've been adapted to Rehoboth Shores. They run very closely with the rules and regulations that are required by our mobile home tenants. And we have found that these rules and regulations work very well for a mixed community.
What amenities are planned for the project?
Well, currently we have an underutilized pool. We also have a marina that in the past year was only 50%, past years has only been 50% occupied. We also have a community building, basketball courts, playgrounds.
What provisions will there be for security for the proposed RV campground?
We currently have security there. It's roving security on the site, generally in the evenings, but we are proposing to add security gates, and we have a security gate at Tall Pines as well, along with a guardhouse, and additional security for the campground as well as Rehoboth Shores and the mobile home section.
Will there be an on-site office and manager?
Yes, we're proposing an on-site office as well as an on-site manager.
And it is the application of Rehoboth Shores that this be a seasonal and not in any way a transient community?
No. We want it to be strictly seasonal. no transients.
If you had to estimate right now, what number of jobs was this project create if it were completed?
We would estimate probably about 8 additional jobs to Rehoboth Shores and to the area.
Thanks, David. That's all I have.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you one more time, and if I hear it again, I'm going to clear the room.
Gentlemen, since the applicant, under your rules of procedure, has no ability to rebut any opposition testimony, I want to make some observations about some letters that appeared in the Friday edition of Cape Gazette and Tuesday's News Journal. Had the author looked at the project booklet on file at the commission or attended the community meeting last fall, she might have understood that no mobile home lot in the developed portion of Rehoboth Shores is threatened in any way. As you heard Mr. Jefferson tell us, the nearest developed lot to the area of the proposed RV park and campground is no less than 50 feet and as much as 100 feet away from the project. There will be a vegetated buffer planted with indigenous trees. No mobile home lots will be eliminated. As you've just heard, there are 80 vacant lots for rent. And as I pointed out at the 2009-2010 absorption rates, that's a 40-year supply. The author of the letter also failed to point out that there's a pretty good set of statutes in the Delaware Code called the Mobile Home Park Conversion Act. That was adopted by the General Assembly, I believe, in 1985. And that was in response to a perceived threat to the rights of mobile home tenants and assures that if there is a conversion of an existing developed mobile home community to a condominium or some other type of ownership, the rights of mobile home tenants are protected. If you remember Sea Air, back in those days, some people got together, negotiated purchase of Sea Air at a price, and before they closed on the deal, they sent a letter out to the Sea Air community saying, we have bought this park, we are going to turn it into a condominium, and you are obliged to buy the site on which your site, your mobile home is situated. Not surprisingly, the mobile home tenants went to the General Assembly and this statute was adopted protecting their rights. What the author of the letters doesn't understand is that this is not a conversion. This is the redevelopment of 51 acres of undeveloped land. If you look at the aerial, this is the developed portion of Rehoboth Shores. This is vacant property. That's where the campground is going. That property is not developed. It is approved as 260 mobile home lots, but it is not developed. The developed portion of Rehoboth Shores can't have and won't have RVs and campers in it. That's prohibited by county ordinance. What's proposed is a seasonal community that's open 7 months of the year. As Tall Pines and Oak Forest and Leisure Point have been successful, this project will be as well. And as DLDOT and the County Engineer's Office observe, with less impact on traffic and sewer capacity than if 260 mobile home lots were developed. Finally, as letters of support from the owners of Leisure Point and Oak Forest indicate, all nearby RV and campsite facilities have been full for years. There's a clear and continuing demand for additional sites. As you know, PLUS has no objection to the project, and there is in your booklet a letter from the State Department of Tourism providing enthusiastic support for this project. In a small way, perhaps, this will stimulate the local economy. It will create some jobs. You'll find in your booklet a set of proposed findings of fact and proposed conditions. And we're glad to try to answer any questions you have.
All right, sir, we thank you. We'll see if anyone on the commission has any questions for you, and we'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the benefit of the applicant and folks here and the commission, I just want, I have about 20 years experience in with RVs, including probably 10 years ago, I had a unit that was placed at Leisure Point in the campground area, and to this day I own a motorhome. So I know some of the issues that are floating here, and as I do, and I do have a couple questions after that little editorial.
I'm not surprised.
And we'll start with the zoning section of 115-172H, which you referred to. And for the benefit of the commission, I passed down a copy of that section. And one of those, just for clarification, that the different points in there are being addressed in that section. In H3, they make reference to that you would be 400 feet from any existing dwelling on property of other ownership.
I omitted to ask Mr. Jefferson that question. He can answer it.
One up here, if you would.
The drawings you have show where the 400 feet comes from the adjacent brick home.
So there is 400 feet.
Yes, there, it, okay. it shows on the one of those drawings, P123.
Okay. Further down,
I'll need you.
Might want to stay up.
Don't go too far, Mr. Jefferson.
And this might be for the general manager. I'm looking at section 8, which talks about accessory buildings. Having been a resident or an owner of a unit in Leisure Point for, I don't know, 3 years maybe, about every site had a storage building. And many of those buildings were of different sizes and shapes and forms. And what I see is a difference in perhaps a conflict between number 8 of our zoning code with your number 10 under your rules and regulation that you're proposing. And I'll give you a second to turn to that. But in your number 10 of your rules, you talk about folks being able to buy a shed. Number 8, as I read it, says that the campground owner will provide the sheds if a shed's to be there. Would you care to address that?
We don't provide.
Sir, you have if you're going to testify, I need you to come up to the mic.
We do not provide the sheds. The site owners will provide their own sheds, as they do at Tall Pines, and it will conform to the county's requirements of 64 square feet.
Mr. Byard, would you care to comment on that in terms of how number 8 reads in our code?
It appears to be that permissive, a campground owner may provide one accessory building on each campsite. The ordinance is silent about whether occupants can provide their own jet. But I defer to Mr. Robinson.
Yeah, I'll have to take that under advisement, reading that ordinance. I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with Mr. Byard's interpretation of it.
I never do.
Yeah, well, there's that.
That's why we have so many attorneys.
But I'll reserve judgment on that. The other thing, if I may, Mr. Johnson, just yes, in light of that, because this is something I thought of reading, 172H, the way it's worded further down that is the placement of the aforesaid structures and their design characteristics must be approved by the commission prior to the erection in any campground. My only thought to the commission would be that if the commission was to look favorably upon this, and I don't know what the commission is going to do, require that those be shown on the final site plan once, so that we're not looking at however many, you know, each time somebody wants to put a shed up if it's approved. I'm not suggesting it should be approved or not, but if that's the way you're going, get it taken care of up front.
Because I know that, you know, having been a resident of Leisure Point, that was one of my concerns, just seeing how things were just packed in there, and it seemed like as they evolved, you know, you had to work around trees and everything else. It became quite a challenge to do that. And this again may be something you might want to take under advisement, counsel, but I'm going to refer to section 115-189 J. And this is under where we're talking about the placement of recreational vehicles that are in a floodplain. And again, that to me would indicate that units have to be removed if they are in a floodplain after they've been there 180 consecutive days. And again, my experience with Leisure Point, and again, that's just one project, that those units never left. You know, mine never left.
There's an answer, Mr. Johnson. Lawrence and I have had this debate, and what the ordinance says is units cannot remain for more than 180 days without being removed unless they comply with the provisions of 115-172.
Well, I'll let our council take that under advisement.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, somewhere in Lawrence's file, not a part of this application, is a memo for me, Lawrence, on the subject.
Mr. Byron, if you could share that memo with me as well, or Lawrence, whichever.
May need to be expurgated, Mr. Robinson.
It makes reference to or being tagged.
Now, this evening I've heard discussion about 367 units, not the 371. Is that due to the proposed two bathhouses?
Now, the application itself was for 367.
Okay. I'll speak from a personal perspective. You know, given my size, I can assure you I probably took a shower in a couple campers and that was it. The rest of the time I look for the bathhouses. Given that you're talking in one unit.
Mr. Johnson, that may fall in the category of TMI.
I didn't tell you how I took a shower. But when I look at these two sections, one section being 182 units and the other being 189 units, and then having a provision of a bathhouse with three showers, I wonder if that's adequate, and perhaps you can address that more from your experience with your other projects.
We have two bathhouses there, but we're also proposing two bathhouses here as well. And in our RV over at Tall Pines, but one bathhouse, actually both bathhouses only have four showers in them, and it's adequate enough. Three toilets, four showers, and we're looking at 480 sites.
Okay.
Okay.
From my personal perspective, I'm probably a bit bigger than most people, but that's another matter, Mr. Chairman. Like you said, TMI. And just for clarification, you're talking about, just for clarification for the public, I know you've mentioned it a couple of times, I think it needs to be stressed that in your project there will be no mixture of RVs and motorhomes. I mean, RVs and mobile homes are due to the fact that it's prohibited in the code.
And it would be a stretch to fit a mobile home on a 40 by 50 lot. That would be a challenge.
Well, perhaps the concern is more is moving them into the mobile home park rather than moving a mobile home into the RV park.
Yes, we all know they cannot be moved into the mobile home park. That's a violation of county ordinance.
Right. Just like I said, I just want to have that clarified for the public. Also, when you talked about your 50-foot buffer, you talked about also having a fence around it as well?
Yes.
And what type of fence are you?
Our proposal is for a split rail fence to match the current community's look and feel. But if we need something sturdier or beefier in the down the road, we will certainly entertain that. But because the buffer zone is going to be screened and heavily planted with plant material,
right.
We don't see a need for anything like an 8-foot tall chain link fence with razor wire.
With barbed wire and all
right,
that.
Right. We want it to match the surrounding areas.
I just want to clarify, you're not going to imprison these folks.
No.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, right now I have no further questions.
All right, sir. We thank you. Mr. Burton.
I am not a seasoned camper as Mr. Johnson is. What will these lots look like? Is there a pad site? How does it work? Is there a concrete pad that's poured and the RVs are rolled on top of that? Or?
Well, I mean, that's done sometimes. I mean, or sometimes a pad is that the RV is pulled next to a concrete pad as it performs, allows a step, or there can be no pad at all. I mean, we're
not planning on concrete pads. It is strictly, it's a grass site. It would be kind of tough right now to put an RV on a concrete pad, being that insurance companies require them to be tied down now. So we need to have that ground underneath the RV in order to tie it down.
Okay, so there is not a need to address stormwater management on this site because there's just all impervious ground. Is that?
No, we have to address stormwater management. There is an increase in impervious area. We have roads, we have campers, we have vehicles parked there. There is an increase in impervious area. We do have to address the stormwater quality and quantity. Measures.
Where will that water go?
To the adjacent tidal waters.
Hide that again. There's a culvert under this road that goes to tidal. This stormwater pond leads out to tidal. There's tidal all around here. There's a road swale along here that goes to tidal.
So your plan would be to, in the lower one, would be to bring it down to the existing swale that's there and then run it.
Yeah, we could improve that swale if necessary and take this. We could put bioswales through here, take this to tidal that way.
Mr. Burton, I think the point that Mr. Jefferson was making is that stormwater requirements will be less in an RV community campground than would be in a developed 160-lot mobile home community.
Well, because it's not
paved. There'll be more pervious surface.
Pervious, yeah.
That's the point.
Okay. I've read in the book what DLDOT says, but how do we go from 260 units to 367 units, or whatever the new number is, and have a decreased traffic account?
I think the reason is that the park is seasonal and will not be open 5 months of the year. The way DLDOT calculates traffic is on the basis of average daily trips. And if there are 5 months with no average daily trips, I think that's how DLDOT reached its conclusion.
And also, I think that a lot of those campsites, even in the seasonal part, will be vacant during the week. I mean, a lot of people would just come for the weekend.
Yes, that's true. I was going to make that same point. And at Tall Pines, during the week, there's nobody. There's, people are not there all the time. So you're looking at 367 sites, but you're not looking at 367 cars. Also, I'd like to make the point that if you had 260 mobile home lots, the average cars for each of those mobile home lots would be two cars per site.
What, you wouldn't have the same average here?
No, we don't.
Why not?
Generally, when people are coming down, and they come in one vehicle.
Okay. Would these units be able to be added on to?
No.
So there's no porches and no decks?
The county code does not allow it. They would allow the addition of removable screen rooms, but that's all.
Okay, and we're getting clarification whether these have to be moved.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second.
Okay. It does say in your presentation that you gave to the homeowners that the overnight camping, that you may make some adjustments in for overnight camping. Is that?
We do not wish to have overnight camping, but that was put in there in case the council proposes that we need to have overnight camping or transient camping. We don't wish to have transient camping there at all. We want it to be strictly seasonal.
Okay. No further questions at this point.
All right, sir. Thank you. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, between having the exhibit book for 7 weeks and Mr. Byard's presentation, I have very few questions, but I would like to ask Mr. Jefferson I hope I got the statement right, that there were 260 EDUs allocated, and that would be reduced by 50%. Is that correct, Mr. Byard or Mr. Jefferson?
I believe, and I'm not the engineer, but I believe the county allocates one-third of an EDU per RV or campsite.
One-quarter.
Oh, it's one-quarter? That's incorrect. One-quarter. And that means that you're doing the math, 90-plus EDUs would be consumed by the project. Add EDUs for the bath facilities and the office. Let's say you're at 105 or 110. At least 150 EDUs would be returned to the district that have been allocated to this site for use elsewhere in the district.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they can do that, I guess, because they're assuming that perhaps there wouldn't be laundry facilities for each individual RV site as opposed to a standard home site.
Correct. And they only have
several bathrooms.
One bathroom.
Versus one.
And most of those are water conserving type of units. So.
If this application was acted favorably on, are there any plans to have any retail uses? You disclosed some of the amenities that you proposed.
Not at this time. There are enough businesses on Long Neck Road that we propose that, you know, we would have the tenants use the local stores, the local businesses, the local sub shops. We don't have any plans to put in a camp store, if that's what you're asking about.
All right, thank you. Will there be an effort to make any type of permanent boundary marker on the RV sites? Would the corners be marked, you know, with the concrete?
Yes.
They'll be marked with
yes.
Something. Okay, thank you. And one last thing, just to restate, I think what Mr. Byard said, the details aside, I believe you were saying that the core of the application is that this is presently undeveloped land that would be a reconfiguration of recorded platted single-family home lots that will not affect other property lines being redesigned, similar to perhaps what we had before the commission of Cannon Road. A few weeks ago.
To change one phase of Rehoboth Shores from one type of development to another without losing a mobile home lot in the existing community.
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir. Thank you, Mr. Ross.
Yes, with regards to the amenities, you stated that there's adequate amenities, you know, for both
this application and your current use, and there's a buffer and a fence around the application, how do these people get to the amenities? Is there, are there paths?
Yes. Well, where the current amenities are, there of course there are roads to back to the marina area, and the pool area is situated such that it is accessible to both mobile home and RV users at the same time. Along with the we have a community building there as well. So that area, that pool, that community building area, is usable by both the RV and mobile home tenants. In the future, if we find that we need to add an additional pool to take care of the RV sites, we certainly will do that. But currently, the current pool area is underutilized and during the summertime. So right now, I mean, it was built with 260 mobile home sites in mind, an additional 260 mobile home sites in mind. So currently, it's adequate.
And the paths will be clearly marked so that visitors that aren't familiar with the sites, they come down on weekends, maybe their cousins or neighbors stay over in their mobile home. I mean, they're not going to be treading over everybody's backyards.
No, there's going to be a dividing line. And again, as we proposed, there's fencing. There's going to be fencing around the area. If can I show you where the pool is?
Please.
The pool area, this whole area is a recreation area. It currently is accessible from the main road of the mobile home park. And it will also be accessible by way of paths, because this is going to be fenced off. This is a road in here as well as a parking area. The pool is right here. So this will be accessible by the RVs as well, but using the main road.
To hop in the old friendly golf cart and ride around. You mentioned that you're not going to ask a single current tenant to move because of this application.
Absolutely not.
No one will be asked or displaced because of the application.
No, absolutely
at all. And am I to assume, given the financial data that you presented, that if anything, this would make the community more viable and maybe less likely for rate increases because of the additional income, or does it have no impact on the current?
It will add additional income to the community so that we can make additional, add additional benefits. We can reduce the rate of, or the growth of any potential rate hikes or rent increases. It will add a lot of benefits to the community as far as additional planned activities that will be available to both the mobile home and RV tenants as well. So yes, that will definitely increase the value of the property that is currently there by allowing us to put more income into it. Okay. As it stands right now, it's empty lots, and we see no way of filling those sites up at one lot a year.
That's all the questions, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't you take them? Mr. Lank?
No questions.
Mr. Abbott?
Questions.
Council?
Yeah, a couple things. One, an answer to Mr. Johnson's question about the reference to Section 115-189. Looking at that, there's two alternatives with regard to recreational vehicle placement, the way it's worded, and you have to be one or the other. One is that you're on a site no fewer than 180 days and be fully licensed. And the second alternative is, or you meet the provisions of 152-172H, which is a campground, which is what we're talking about. So if you're in a campground, you don't have to be pulled off after 180 days. I want to clarify a few things just for the record for my own benefit in the commission. Mr. Bard, you talked about, or maybe it was a gentleman from the mobile home park, 80 vacant lots exist currently. Are any of those 80 lots within the area that is subject to this application?
No.
Okay, all right. Because we've talked about that there's lots that are being basically converted into the parks, but or a campground, but that there's no homes there. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't mixing apples and oranges.
No.
Of these 80 lots, every one of them has
water and sewer stopped off to it. They're ready to be occupied.
Okay.
None of the 260 undeveloped lots has that available.
Okay. The RVs, do they stay there year-round? Are they pulled off October 31st in iPods?
Some people will take them off and travel. Most people, it is our, you know, our experience at 12 Pines that most people leave them there during the winter months.
What provisions are there? I think it was in one of the letters. What provisions are there for security for all these vacant RVs in the park?
Well, first off, we have the fencing that will be up there, but also we will have gates, and those areas will be closed off with additional security to make sure that no one gets into those areas in the off season.
Then my last question for clarification's sake, and somebody else already asked about whether there would be overnight or transient camping, so that's taken care of. There seems to be some discrepancy between the written materials regarding the proposed conditions and then the proposed rules and then what you said tonight as far as when it would open and when it would close. Just conclusively, what's the proposed opening date and what's the proposed closing date?
Opening would be April 1st, closing would be October 31st.
Okay. The reason I say that is your proposed conditions said March 15th, and that's what I wanted to make sure of. So it's April 1st.
We're going April 1st to October 31st. Just, it's even. It just gives us a couple extra weeks to get ready.
Okay. All right. That's all the questions I had. Thanks.
All right, sir. Gentlemen, we thank you. We'll take a seat nearby. We'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of conditional use number 1862, Nanticoke Shores Associates, LLC? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to conditional use number 1862?
Keep in mind, though, Mr. Chairman, if you would, that we are going to ask for a show of hands as well. So in terms of anybody who's here in favor of or in opposition to.
Is there anyone here that is representing an organized group, that is an authorized representative of an organized group? Okay, you, one, two, three, four folks will go first, followed by anybody else who wants to speak. We'll start with the gentleman in the red vest, followed by the lady in their red vest, sweater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, commissioners. Thank you for listening. My name is John Walsh. I'm the vice president of the Delaware Manufactured Homeowners Association. I wear a few other hats, too, as a few of you may know. I would like to first lead off with their discussion that I just heard about the mixed parks, such as Sierra and I believe one of the Pines communities. It is my understanding those mixed-use communities are old. They were there 30, 40, 50 years ago, and there was difficulty with that type of mixed park, and this is why they were no longer allowed. This seems to me as going backwards a little bit and reverting. Also, I'd like to, bounce off something Commissioner Burton brought up, and that's traffic is going to be reduced according to DelDOT and according to the gentleman that we're speaking. Well, if you only permit, shall we say, traffic on 5-6 months out of the year, yes, the average over the course of the year will be reduced. But the height of the season, and if those of you have been down Long Neck Road during the season, know it adding an additional 100 or so possible amounts of traffic per weekend does not help matters, and it doesn't reduce anything. It worsens it. I'd also like to bring up the fact that by turning this into purely RV territory, the potential for better taxes for the county are reduced. Manufactured home communities, manufactured home lots pay property tax. The homeowners do this. Also, Long Neck Road, there would be no need for improvement. DelDOT has not exactly been famous recently for having accurate projections for future planning. And again, the worst traffic being increased over the worst possible time of the year does not strike me as being a good move. Finally, I happen to live in an area that is bordered on by an RV park. Most of the people in that RV park are very nice. It's a reasonable area. However, one side of my community is bordered on by that RV park. There was a chain link fence put in because of complaints or difficulties about people going through and going into my community. Every year, even the chain link fence has more holes in it than a piece of Swiss cheese. So the security is very minimal, to say the least. And the other display that was there, they're not putting an RV area beside a manufactured home community. They're putting it in a manufactured home community where it's bordered on in two or three or even four sides. So to get there, you're going through the manufactured home community. They say they're going to have security, split rail fence, I believe was the term that they used. I can get over a split rail fence. What more can I say? I'm sure others will have terms to use, but I speak in opposition to this. I think it is a misuse of the property and a very, very dangerous precedent. Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
All right, sir. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you were strictly told there would be no applause. One more, and you're all going to go home. Yes, sir. Ma'am, excuse me, your turn. In the red, representing a group.
That was you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then you representing a group in the red. Yes.
Good evening. My name is Pat Weil, and I have a home in Bay City, which is right next door to Rehoboth Shores.
Can you tell us who you're representing?
Sure. I'm Vice President of the Bay City Manufactured Homeowners Association. We've been chartered since 2002, and we're registered with the RTA. I received a call from David, and I do apologize. I'll just refer to you as David. I'm not quite sure how to say the last name. The regional manager for Rehoboth Shores. He asked why I was objecting to the request to convert the park to RV lots. As I explained to David, the request is not fair to the existing homeowners. Many of the residents, including my aunt, who lives in Rehoboth Shores, has invested their life savings in these homes. David stated because of the economy, they have to do something to make money. We talked about cleaning up the park, lowering the rent, making, you know, communication between residents and management to where you're selling the opportunity to fill those 80 lots. This landowner brought in FEMA trailers, federal FEMA trailers, to rent out without any warning to the existing residents and the people in the area. I have a FEMA trailer next to my park, which has lowered the value of the homes in our park. In one situation that I reviewed with David about Rehoboth Shores is that they can rent out the FEMA trailers and other trailers that they've bought from previous residents who have left the park. But in one case in the park, a resident with health issues asked if she could rent out her home until she was back on her feet, and she was told no. But the landowner can rent out homes. David explained that they have no control over the type of people that would be renting this person's home. I asked, and instead of just saying no, why didn't you make a win-win situation for both of you? Why didn't you offer to also be in the approval process?
I understand the issue, this is a land use proceeding, okay?
And I'm getting to that.
Let's get to it quickly.
I asked why they didn't offer the win-win situation. Where is it fair for a landowner to change the park after people have invested their life savings into their home? The landowner is not taking the residents into consideration. Okay, I'm going to pass out pictures of Rehoboth Shores. In the real estate world, there is a term called principle of externalology. It means the external surroundings affect the value of the property. Between the poor condition and upkeep of this park, the added FEMA trailers, and the request to add RV lots, The value of the homes currently in this park have suffered and will continue to suffer the consequences. Now I'm going to submit copies of Leisure Point. You have copies of Rehoboth Shores, which is a concern about the upkeep of the park. I would question, are the residents in manufactured housing in permanent situations with Rehoboth Shores? Are they going to pay for this RV lots to be brought in? Because as you can see by the pictures of Rehoboth Shores, the landowner has not kept this park up. With the RV lots, this adds a concern for the safety of the residents. The landowner refuses to allow a resident to rent out their home when they have health conditions because they don't have control over who's in the park, but they want to introduce RV lots that have transients coming and going. I'm a watchdog for fairness for people. You've seen me up here for the last 10 years. I'm asking this Planning and Zoning Board to deny this request, protect the current residents of manufactured housing in Rehoboth Shores and their investments. If the homeowner or if the landowner wants to do something, lower the rent, clean up the park, and try to get people in there to rent those 80 lots. Don't make the current residents suffer. Okay. Any questions?
I don't think so. We thank you, and
thank you.
You're always welcome here at Planning and Zoning. Representing a group, sir? Representing a group?
Yes.
Okay, you come on up, and then the lady in the back.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm Ed Spiro, and I represent the Delaware Manufactured Homeowners Association. I'm president thereof. I live in Rehoboth Shores. I've heard a lot of testimony here tonight. I also heard the security, and I heard what John had to say about that security. A split rail fence is not security, and I don't think anybody has to explain that to any of you gentlemen. I don't think the tree situation, where you're going to put a tree or these Leland pine buffers up, is going to do anything to deter anybody that wants to steal or move around into somebody else's area. The other thing I heard is about these, it's going to cut back on the traffic. Now, I can understand how DelDOT and these other folks may arrive at this number, because if you said you had 260 empty lots, okay, and you had two cars per lot, and now we're going to 367, they're saying they're cutting back on the number of cars or the number of vehicles that are going to be in there. My question then is, if you told me that in 2009 you leased two lots and in 2010 you leased one lot, that's only three lots. So how long is it going to take you to lease 260? I'd like to ask that question. 260 lots to be leased at two cars a lot on lots that aren't even developed. We haven't even talked about that. They aren't even developed yet. They have one road going back to the rear of the community, if you will. It's called Seahawk Lane. You come down, you turn to the right, and you go out. You can go out three roads then, but they all enter into one place. I'm sure that Mr. Lank, who's been out there several times, could tell you the same things. Next thing is, when these people come in, are they bringing boats? Are they bringing ski-doos? And if so, where are they going to put them? Where are they going to be stored? What's going to happen to them? Who's going to control all these people that are coming in for the playground or for the swimming pool? And we all know how that works. I've also worked as a compliance investigator for the state. And in going around to the different places, including Tall Pines, including Sierra, I am fully aware that back in 1985, that when Sierra, which was a RV and a mobile home park, that they said it was going to be seasonal. And then they were going to sell it, and it was going to be condominium. And that's when Chapter 71 and 72 came into place. That was under, at that time, Representative George Bunning and Representative Albright. And they changed that so that that could not happen. Having said that, then from that point, they said that these seasonal campsites in Sierra would remain seasonal. Well, they never became seasonal. They used them year-round. And they continued to use them year-round. I know that when they had another organization that represented the manufactured home communities, it was then called, I hate to say this, but it was called Schmucka, and it was the Sussex County Mobile Home Tenants Association. You remember that, Lawrence. But at that particular time, when they did that, several of those people lived in those RVs, and they lived in them year-round.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to relate that to the case at hand.
Yes. Now, what I'm saying is...
I appreciate all the history, but we're really talking about this application.
But what I'm saying is, again, they stated that it was going to be seasonal. I've seen it over at Holly Lakes. It's going to be seasonal. But I can take you back there, and they're there year-round. I can take you to Tall Pines, and I can show you people who are there year-round. I can take you to many of these communities because I've been there.
Just need to tell you, please don't pound on that, because what it does to that microphone, you would not believe what that sounds like.
All right, thank you.
Sounds like a cannon going on.
All right, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I understand you're passionate about the issue. Proceed.
All right. The other thing I would ask is everybody in that community, everybody that I know of, and I know most of the people in there, and they're very good people living in that community. They have a good homeowners association, and every one of those people has to have a background check, a criminal background check and a credit check. Is anybody going to do that to these people? I've never heard that mentioned. I've never heard a word about that. They said there is plenty of room at with the one gate, or not gate, it's actually a drive in, Goose, I don't know the exact nomenclature of the road, but it's Goose something road. At any rate, when you come in, I can tell you that in some occasions in the morning, where the school buses are picking up the children, it's right in front of the office, and the traffic is backed up on Long Neck Road. And with the dates that you have here, it could very possible happen, because we have also the summer kids that go to school and to the church day camps, etc. So it's something that we need to think about, and we really need to work on. Thank you very much for your time, gentlemen.
All right, sir. We thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Vicki Rollison. I'm also a resident of Rehoboth Shores. I'm losing my voice. I was at the meeting in October.
Excuse me, ma'am, what group are you representing?
Rehoboth Shores Homeowners Association Incorporated.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, I'm the secretary.
No, don't worry about it. Then you're the one that actually knows what's going on where you work.
Yeah.
Ma'am, can I have your name again?
Vicki Rollison.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. I was at that meeting in October when they presented all this. What they said today is totally different than what they told us then. They also made us a bunch of promises that on Monday morning they reneged. We're trying to better our park for everybody involved. We have had crime in there that has been astronomical. We've been promised 24-hour security that's never there. We've been promised all kinds of things. I just went around in our park and took, and I'm sorry, I can't print them the way.
That's fine.
These are very recent. They're like from February of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the empty lots that, according to their standards, have to be cleaned up within 30 days of the removal of the home that had been sitting there for a year. We've had where they've pulled out footers and have sat there for months as a security hazard. The RV park is only going to bring in more criminal activity. We already have it bad enough during the summer. We have, as they said, we have to go through background checks to be able to live there. And we have to abide by their standards, but yet they don't hold themselves accountable to their own standards. We've talked to them and said, you give us the material, we'll put things up. We'll help. We're willing to help. The association is. They talk about our playground. Ha, that is a joke. Our playground is a set of swings and a sliding board, two little rocking toys for the little ones. The merry-go-round was broken by the kids in the park. They have not fixed that. The tennis court or the basketball court did have fencing around that. They took that down. The fencing that runs alongside of the road that separates Rehoboth Shores and Bay City to try to keep the kids out from going from, you know, in amongst the parks, that they've torn that all down. There's no security. I've worked in security for 25 years. I've seen more things than I could shake a stick at that's going on in that park right now. I've reported, nothing happens. Bringing this RV park in and putting just the split rail fence, that's not going to protect anybody. And how long is it going to take for that buffer to grow? You're not going to put them in there with they're not going to put in 15-foot trees. One of the other things about them saying it's not going to generate more traffic, I don't know. I've lived there for 7 years, and I hate it in the summer. And especially for the people that live down here all year round. They try to get to work. It's horrible. Memorial Labor Day weekend, it takes you 4 hours to get down that road. So it will cause more traffic. It's also going to cause more crime. There are FEMA homes in that park, and it was marked FEMA right across the frame. So to say that there's no FEMA homes in that park is a lie.
I don't think anybody said that, ma'am. I think people have testified that,
yeah,
that there are.
They said there were no FEMA homes.
No, he said that there were. I mean, that was the testimony.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So
okay,
I don't think we're in
all right.
Dispute.
So, that's, okay. So I'm sorry.
My
so there's no dispute that
yeah.
that there are FEMA okay. homes in the park. I'm sorry. I must have been sleeping.
Our lot rent, yeah, they told us it was going to be held for 1 year. So mine's due to increase in October. It'll jump anywhere from 6 to 10 to 15%, depending on what they decide to do. You know, I haven't had a raise in 5 years. I'm sinking. So instead of doing it, why can't you help your own community? They do nothing for us. Our park looks like crap. And what all the Homeowners Association is trying to do is work with them to make our community better and safer. And we don't get any response. I was told I would have a direct email address for the association to the owners. That was never provided. The security has not been bumped up like we were promised. We've had shootings in there. We've had convicted felons in there. We've had a sex offender in there. And what we're looking for is our own protection. They'll put a gate up. What when the RV park gets there? What about my security? What about my fellow homeowners? What about our security? They don't care. And that's just the way we feel. If they start, our position is, if they work with us, we'll work with them. But at this point, we're opposed to the RV park completely. And we were not told that they would be sharing our pool. We were told that they would have their own pools along with a campground.
When were you told that, ma'am?
At the October meeting.
Okay.
That's all. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else representing a group? One more group, okay, or two more. Yes, sir, in the black.
Good evening. My name's Neil Dickerson. I live in Potnets Creekside and co-treasurer of DeMoa.
Of what?
DeMoa Delaware Manufactured Home.
Thanks.
I just want to touch on a few things. This is my first time up here, so bear with me a little.
All right, just pretend that you're in your living room and you and I are just having a friendly chat by the fire. I used to say drinking a beer, but he made me stop saying that. So. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, liquor issues.
They never mentioned the size of campers allowed or if they're going to be RV campers. Or are they going to be contained units? And what size lots will they have to hold these? I don't remember the lot size mentioned.
40 by 50?
Yeah, well, the code provides that each campsite must have an area of at least 2,000 square feet and a width of not less than 40 feet.
So it has to be at least 40 by 50. That's what's in the code. But
so that wouldn't handle a contained $200,000 unit?
I don't know if it would or not, sir.
I
would hope not.
They did a lot of studies I was hearing before, but I never heard them say anything about they did any studies on the decreased value of the home, that it doesn't affect the homes. My question is, if you took a home and put it in plantation you have there and you run an RV in there, I think that would really depreciate the value of the home. So I don't understand where they came up with that. The frozen rents, tunnel froze his rents. Now that's remarkable, but he did it also. So that really has no bearing on it. And the mobile home investments that are made by the people, I've heard a couple people say that, and I'm not going to reiterate that, but they have to understand that when people my age and older move down from other states and we move into a private community and pay the amount of lot rent that we pay to live in those communities, and somebody is going to wake up one morning and go out on their deck and have a coffee and sit there and talk to a fifth wheeler, I know that's going to decrease the rent, my value of my home. The amenities, I think they talked about having a swimming pool, and they're going to have unused clubhouse that really didn't get much used. Mr. Spiral spoke about shared amenities, but we're not going to share any of the amenities of the homeowners association there. Is that correct? All right, did I misunderstand that?
I believe they said that they would use the pool.
They are going to use the pool, which is a shared amenity. They're going to use a clubhouse, which is a shared amenity. So now, where they say they're not going to go in to their area, they absolutely are. The 24/7, is that going to be security at that gate 24/7 around the clock? And what denotes seasonal of a full-timer and a part-timer? Is it 6 months denoting that it's a part-time, and anything over 6 months is a full-time? Is there any ruling on that?
Counselor, do we have any specific description of specific definition in the code as to what constitutes a seasonal, or is it simply established by the conditional use?
It's established by the conditional use. I mean, that's what we were talking about the time period.
7 months.
Clarifying.
When seasons are defined, actually a lot of times it's a seven-month period. We have considered that to be seasonal without really much regard as to whether it was 7 days a week or 2 days a week during that seven-month period. You know, that's what seasonal has meant.
And what kind of roads will be in the park and what kind of lighting? I didn't hear anything on that. I heard that the sites were going to be just dirt, but are the roads also going to be just dirt?
What they've proposed in their conditions, that was one of the things I looked at, was that the roads would be constructed to, in accordance with, Sussex County street design requirements. So that's what they proposed. So that's basically a subdivision street.
And lighting?
There's no reference to lighting.
No reference to
that's
lighting.
That's typically something that the commission decides whether it wants to require lighting or not.
No further questions. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you. Okay, a group, somebody with a group. This lady up here says she's got a group.
Good evening. Thank you for this chance to present. I have distributed my written comments. I am going to, in the interest of time, just highlight what I have written. My name is Gina Misrendino. I'm the facilitator of the Sussex Housing Group, which is a permanent committee of the Delaware Housing Coalition. We again would like to reiterate our thanks to the Sussex County Council for continuing the support of our work. The purpose of the Sussex Housing Group is to identify fair and affordable housing issues and to help the Sussex community address them with all deliberate speed. This proposed conditional use falls well within this realm, we feel. We have deep concerns about this proposal for several reasons, and I have some data, and this is all Sussex County specific. Number one, on the home ownership side, Sussex County has the highest median home price in Delaware, coming in at $237,000. This leaves an $80,000 gap between what a moderate income family can afford and the median home price in Sussex County. On the rental side, the fair market rent in Sussex County for a modest two-bedroom apartment is $774 a month. This leaves a gap of $313 a month between an affordable rent and an FMR for extremely low-income families. There are close to 72,000 workers in Sussex. The median wage is $13.49 an hour. This leaves a gap of $1.39 an hour between the median wage and the housing wage. And that the deficit of affordable and available housing units in the county is close to 1,900. And the citations are all listed at the bottom of the page. In the December 2010 release of the American Community Survey, which is part of the U.S. Census Bureau survey of selected housing characteristics, it shows in Sussex County that 40.8% of renters are paying more than 35% of their income on housing. Our conclusion is that the data cited above irrefutably demonstrates the challenge the families of modest means in Sussex County face in securing decent, safe housing. The goal of the housing element of the 2008 Sussex County Comprehensive Plan is, and this is a quote, facilitate decent, safe, and sanitary housing for low and moderate income people throughout Sussex County. Under this goal, more specifically, it's stated in Objective 2, to encourage manufactured homes as an affordable housing tool. National and regional data show only a deteriorating situation for affordable housing and the looming storms of major budget cuts at the federal level that we're hearing about now may only worsen Delaware's overall ability to address its affordable housing status. Therefore, we believe it is counterintuitive, if not harmful, to approve any measure which would preclude the opportunity for affordable housing, which is currently zoned correctly, appropriately, and very clearly needed. Thank you for your work and, again, for the opportunity to present this evening.
All right, ma'am, we thank you. Anybody else representing a group? Representing a group. One more. Okay. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'm glad all you group folks didn't bring your posse with you. We would have had to rent the Civic Center.
My name is Barbara Duff. I live in Rehoboth Shores. I'm the current treasurer of the Homeowners Association. I have been asked by the seniors, a lot of the seniors in the park, to represent them at this meeting. When most of us moved into Rehoboth Shores, we either retired or we planned to retire there and spend the rest of our lives there. At that time, there was no renting in the park. You had to buy a home or get one moved in at your expense. we were okay with younger people coming in because we're not quite that old yet. And so anyhow, we had to sign 5-year leases. Our rent keeps, of course, everybody's rent goes up every year with all the other expenses. The retired people live on a fixed income. And we're getting really scared because right now we can't sell our homes. Nobody wants to come into this park now. And if RVs come in there, we're never going to sell our homes. We're stuck. We can't move. We can't afford to buy a lot. If we find a lot and we have a home that's movable and we have a 5-year contract and we're still in that contract, maybe 4 more years, we're told that we still have to pay that rent for 4 years, whether our trailer's sitting on it or not. So we can't afford to get out. We're stuck. Like I said, there was no renting going on, and now there is. And when we ask about the trailers coming in, I know you don't like to hear the word FEMA again, but we went to the office as a representative, and we asked what was going on, and they told it was no concern of theirs and really none of our business. Currently, there's over 40,000 lawsuits against parks in other states that are putting in FEMA trailers because they were deemed inhabitable for human use. They were sold as scrap metal and to be used either as the metal or chicken houses because of the formaldehyde in it. Our home, our community center, we have a meeting once a month, and we have a little group of old ladies that play bingo on Friday nights. That's their only entertainment, where they don't have to leave the parking ground on the highways. That's going to be gone. We can't afford to give another 300 and some people our clubhouse. Right now, since the fall, our clubhouse has been storage for all the FEMA trailer furniture. So we canceled we have a Halloween party for the kids that we pay for. We take them on hay rides and we give prizes. We have Santa Claus at Christmas. And we have picnics in the summer, which everybody in the park is invited. We pay for it. They give us nothing. They gave us one picnic last fall, and that was to tell us what was coming. We see other rents. We see ads in the paper, come to Rehoboth Shores and rent for $239. That's insulting to us. Right now I'm paying $560, and I don't live on the water. And we have to keep our lawns in perfect shape. We have to keep our flower beds weeded, which we planted. We have to keep our driveways clean, and we have to keep our shrubbery trimmed. And if we don't, we get notices. After the third notice, we're told we can be evicted. Now, if we're going to have 300 and some people or units coming in, that's probably double or triple the kids. I never saw one man go camping without family. They're going to be going through our yards to get to the beach. Our beach holds maybe 4 cars and 2 golf carts parking. Where are they going to park? They're coming to the ocean and to the beach. They're going to be going through all their yards. Are we going to get penalized for cleaning up their mess and walking over our flower beds? In conclusion, we had a few of our members go out and get a petition signed. We didn't get very many people because most people were at work and a lot of people aren't down for the winter. But I'd like to give you the petitions that we do have signed by air park owners and people on Long Neck Road, and that comes to 395 signatures.
I would ask you to pass it to our attorney, and he'll take a look at it.
And
pass it down.
I thank you.
Yes, ma'am, we thank you. Okay, any more groups? No more groups. Okay, let's start with everybody else. We'll start right up front here with the lady in the red.
Mr. Chairman, if I would, too, just to remind the folks in the audience that the commission needs to hear what's relevant with regard to the land use on this conditional use application for RVs on this particular piece of property. And I don't mean to diminish everybody's concerns, for example, about lot rent or FEMA trailers, but that's not really relevant to what the commission and ultimately council are going to need to decide in this case. So, and certainly I think the commission's got the picture with regard to those issues as well. So if you could keep it to your concerns about this particular conditional use application and the effects that it would have as a result of the land use change that's proposed. Thanks.
Hello, thank you for having me tonight, and I won't go over things that were already gone over. First of all, let me say that I'm, like Mr. Johnson, also owned an RV at one time.
First of all, tell us who you are.
My name is Susan Lausche.
Thank you. Sorry. All right, go ahead.
And like Mr. Johnson, I once owned an RV and now own a manufactured home. A couple questions I had in regard to parking spaces. My husband and I were both previously married and had two children from our previous marriages. We used our camper because it was affordable vacation for both of us. We always used two cars. I usually had the children and came with them either after my part-time job or after they were done school. My husband then came after his job. So most of the time you do have two vehicles at a campground. You also use the toilet facilities the same in a camper as you do a mobile home or a manufactured home. So I'm not sure how that would be lessened either. Also, in regards to, as Mr. Johnson said, for the facilities for the shower, I can tell you from experience.
Ma'am, I really don't want to know about your shower, but
I'm talking about facilities.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. If you just let me explain that when you use your shower facilities, you usually don't use them in the camper, as Mr. Johnson said. You go to the community shower, and you usually go between the hours of 6 and 7. So you're going to have 367 campers full of people headed to the showers relatively at the same time. You don't walk there because you've got four kids and all their paraphernalia, so you take a car. What kind of parking spaces are there at the shower house and facilities? What kind of traffic does that cause en route to that? I didn't hear any addressing of that. They didn't say what the driveways in front of the camper areas would be made out of. Was it crush and run? Was it just dirt so that it would bring in mud? The expert testimony, I really didn't hear any. Maybe it's in the packet. I didn't hear if there was a floodplain study done. I heard there were 9 different kinds of soil, but I didn't hear how the soils were tested, each one of them, to see how they would affect with the drainage. I didn't hear that there was any guttering added to the community to take the runoff off of these streets. The one fellow in the Marine, I'm sorry I don't remember his name, gave you a lot of facts and figures, then said he was neither an economist and this was an unscientific information that he gave you. So I would say that we would disregard all that as well. They also said that they would only be using the campers in the 7-month period, which is your busiest time in the year in a resort area. So 7 months in a really busy time, I say, is equals a full time. You also will notice, as your attorney was saying too, and I have it in front of me, that there are pretty strict, stringent set of rules for manufactured homes and very little for campers. So I also think this is a way for people that have manufactured home sites that overprice their rent, and now they have all these extra lots that they can't rent, and that's the real reason they have 80 open lots, is that they can also skirt the current code and law by reverting these to camper areas. So that's my concern at this time. I also have a concern that there were pre-hearing memos between Mr. Lank and the applicants, and we weren't really clear on what was included in that. We did address the concrete pads that the homes would be put on, or campers. You can have, there's many campsites that have concrete pads. You can still tie them down outside, so that's not an issue, and it probably would make for a better look in the community. However, then stormwater would also be an issue. They didn't say if they would be park models, fifth wheels, campers. They really didn't reiterate exactly what the description of those would be. We are in the wetlands there, and there's a lot of flooding, and I would suggest that all these things be addressed, as well as the shared facilities from the campers and the homeowners. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your patience and for being a good sport. All the way in the back. That was your traveling music, ma'am. That was your traveling music.
Kidding back had the music on plenty coming in here. My name's Debbie Irwin, and I live in Rehoboth Shores. I would just like to make an offer to each and every one of you that you're more than welcome to come over. I will provide you with coffee and donuts, and I will give you a travel through the park. We have excessive flooding on our roads continually, which is going to be a problem with these homes coming in. They say that we are facing sharing the pool with 300 and some campers, because right now they're saying the use of our pool this summer was minimally cut in half. That was because of the lack of care of the pool. Okay, that was really the major reason. People did not want to go to the pool in a pool that was not attended properly. Okay, our beach was eroded with the big seasonal issues with the snowstorm one year with the flood, and it was haphazardly replaced so that we now have half the beach that we used to have. If they would do something with some form of bug control at the beach, more people would be using the beach. I live four lots off the beach. I cringe every summer with the other people that live there seasonally in the mobile homes coming down, because the children run erratic in some of their golf carts, even though there is a law that says in that park you must be 17. Good luck. When you see 12-year-olds riding around on golf carts, which is extremely dangerous. Okay, there is not sufficient room for the people that are there. No less adding to it. I grew up camping all of my childhood. So it's not something I'm familiar with. And I don't deny those people every right to go out and enjoy a fabulous, fun thing and an affordable thing in the summertime. But I want you to go to Leisure Park and take a look at how well their park has been designed and how well it's been maintained and how well their mobile home has been maintained and how well the campsite has been maintained. Then come look at our dump. With all the promises, people thought I was crazy to put the mobile home that I put in there. But I was told this would be like this, this would be like this, this would be like this. Number one, I pay $500 and some dollars a month. Yes, I have the amenity of looking out across the bay. I am thankful for that view. And I don't mind paying it. But what I don't appreciate is when the owners can't even dig in their pocket at $500 and some dollars a month to make sure I get a driveway, because I live in the old section. I just moved in there 2 years ago. Everybody else that moved in since then gets driveway. So what I'm saying is, because of mismanagement, which will only continue to deteriorate, okay, we are going to have our investments continually going down. Most of these fantastic people here, if they want to hold up their hands, will tell you that a lot of them will not have and do not have the nerve to stand up here and say what I have said because of fear of reprisal from their management.
Well, they will have a chance to be counted, though. We'll make sure they're
counted. So obviously, there would be a lot more people speaking their mind. But their management is very twisted, very unfair, and come and goes according to the mood of the management. That place is totally mismanaged. It was properly managed. It was cleaned up. If the association was allowed to have minimal funds to do some decent things to it, he would not have the empty lots he has. If you didn't change your mind and have an attitude every time you turned around, like this one's not good enough or this one's too good for it, it's just totally indecisive. It is just a bad thing waiting to happen. When I first looked in there, I'm a bail bondsman. I went, oh, wow. I bailed him out, I bailed him out, I bailed him out. You know, I can sit there right on the corner and watch drug deals go down. Right on the corner from the park, as you come in, drug deals going on. What are they doing about it? What are they doing about it? He doesn't live there, and his management team doesn't do much. The security can only do just so much. They are not police. Their hands are tied, and it's limited. If you allow this to go on, you are opening yourself up for a disaster. Okay? When you walk into the mobile home sales lot, Atlantis, Oakwood, any of those, and tell them where you're going to put a mobile home in, they're like, why would you want to put it there? Well, obvious, because I don't want to pay $900 in tunnels, please. But I'm paying $500 and some to only find out that my ruby shoes don't work. And I think that you really ought to take the time as committee to drive through there and see what you're offering.
Let me stop you right there.
Thank you.
And assure you that everybody up here has been there. Not only that, several of us.
I'm sure that you see some of the disaster.
You've seen it. Yes,
and
ma'am.
You've seen the flooding. The story's not going to change. It's just going to get worse.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Ma'am, right here in the coral. Coral, yes, coral.
Hi, my name's Sandy Spence. I live in Lewis, and I'm on the board of directors of the Delaware Housing Coalition, so I'd like to associate myself with the testimony you heard from the Sussex Housing Group.
Sure.
And some of you are aware of my affiliation with the League of Women Voters, but I haven't had an opportunity to clear my statement with them, so I'm speaking as an individual tonight. As usual, we heard a pretty slick presentation about this proposal, and it sounds like a wonderful project. And it sounds like a good campsite that would be needed in this county for all the tourists that like to come here. The thing that I'm concerned about is the location in an area which has already been approved for manufactured homes. I don't know of anything in the county code or regulations that suggests that you must approve this project, but if you were trying to figure out a basis for the decision, I would suggest you look at the county comprehensive plan. Gina mentioned a part of it, and I would just like to reiterate some of the requirement or some of the suggestions in the housing element that was approved in 2008 by the state. And so presumably this is a requirement for the county to consider as you're making land use decisions. The announcement of the plan suggested that strengthening agriculture, protecting open space, fostering more affordable housing, encouraging greener construction all are worthy concepts, and they are just some of the many goals of the newly adopted Sussex County Comprehensive Plan update. And it represents a vision for the county for the future and how best the county and its people can make that vision a reality. It goes on to give some of the prices of housing that are so much higher than any other county in the state. But then it says, on the downside, the county's strong housing market has driven up home prices and apartment rentals to new highs. Sussex County's low to moderate income working households are hit hardest by these cost increases because their incomes typically do not keep pace with the cost of living, especially the cost of housing. And Gina gave you some of the statistics, so I won't go into that. Hers are more up to date anyway. It goes on. There's a whole section with one, two, three, four,
Spence,
four
we
paragraphs.
We are intimately familiar with the land
use
plan.
Well, I just thought
I'm
you had
to ask you to limit that testimony. We know what's in the land use plan. Please associate that with this application.
Okay.
Us, if you would.
It goes on for four paragraphs about the importance to Sussex County of manufactured housing. And so I would just like to summarize and says that it at the under the goals, objectives, and strategies, it says encourage manufactured homes as an affordable housing tool. So it seems to me that this proposal needs to be rejected because its approval would be in opposition to the goals of the comprehensive plan. And even though it may be an appropriate campground proposal, it ought to be in some other location, not in a location that has already been approved for manufactured homes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate your patience. All the way in the back with the left hand in the air, the brown jacket, green t-shirt, sandy-colored hair, beard, ruddy complexion, glasses.
I live in Rehoboth Shores. I'm Bruce Furrier, but I'm not one of the lucky ones that pays $500 and some a month. I pay $600 a month for my view. During the summer, my view, I get to see all the vehicles of the people that come to put their boats in the water. I get to see the back of their vehicles. During the weekend, they're parked in the parking lot, and they also try to park in everybody else's parking lot back there because there's not enough room for the number of slips they have. You have room for six cars. They have. David, how many slips are in the back marina?
Are you going to ask us? Come this way.
How many slips are in the back marina, David?
Sir. Look.
What I'm saying is...
It is look over your left shoulder tonight, okay?
I think I know what you're trying to say,
but go ahead.
Is you're going to bring all the campers in.
Right.
I was a camper. I've camped in my lounge just like this gentleman. I had a boat in my slip in my butt. You're going to have 367 people, 367 more boats. Where are you going to park them at if they don't keep them in the marina? Every weekend, you're not going to have room. And they say about not infringing on our view. You're going to infringe on our view because you're going to have to park on our roads in front of my house. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to say. It's just not, you know, it's there's just not enough room to do what they want to do.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Yes, sir, right here in the black jacket.
Good evening, gentlemen. John Morris from Camelot. And sitting here tonight, and I'll stick right with what we're concerned about, and that's the sites going in there. There's been a valid list of reasons why this should not take place. And I'm hoping that we can get the secretary or somebody to make a compiled list. I think the lack of knowing how close the sites are to one another, I'm not sure if that's going to pass any of the fire codes for that. So that would be my first concern. And then on those lots, not to have an exact detail of what they're going to permit to be put on that space. Is it a drive-in Winnebago that's a complete unit? Is it a trailer? And not to repeat everything, the boat and the parking down at the slip, it's going to be a problem. I live next to Sea Air, and if you want to see a disaster, go take a ride through the Sea Air.
Been there.
And look at the trailers that are there all year round with the blue tarps hanging over the roofs because the roofs cave in during the snow, but they just throw tarps over them. The sheds, excuse me, are a disaster. There's not two sheds that look the same or built the same or anything else. And the last thing that I want to add that's new, what are the people in this development going to do with trash? The state laws, the county laws, they're all changing, and they're all going into effect now.
Excuse me. All right.
I remember you told Ed, I'm ready for the beer. I don't know where it's at, but bring it out, will you? Trash is going to be a number one product. The street lighting that we say hasn't even been shown, but trash, let's just go with trash. How are those people going to recycle? How are we going to control what trash, if they even put it out in bags or don't worry? And I admit, I'm a camper, been there, had six kids, traveled all over the country in a camper. And we are responsible people. But again, when you get permanent sites that they're allowed to leave trailers in, even if they do the best to lock it up, and no facilities available, I don't know if they're going to be able to control the people that want to come down on a weekend, because those things are self-contained. They all have water. They all have waste. And is there going to be a dumping site at this place for a trailer coming in, or are they going to take everything that they just brought from somewhere else and tie it into the hookup at the and dump that waste into it? So there are just a couple new things that I wanted to bring out, because you've got a major list of things that should say we're not putting this in. And the last thing is, this is the camel getting its nose under the tent, because I know there's other parks that are looking and waiting and seeing what's going to go on, because they all want to do something similar, and some of them are trying to sneak it in now. So you've got a major decision. This is just not one development going in. This is Sussex County, and it's going to get hit hard. Thank you.
I understand. Thank you, sir. Okay, yes, ma'am, right up here in the front.
Mr. Chairman, while she's walking up, I want to tie into something that this gentleman just said, and it's a comment that I've made, the commission knows, at many hearings. We've heard a lot tonight. As far as the record's concerned, it doesn't matter if one person says something or 100 people say something. It still has the same amount of weight. So we ask that you not be repetitious. We've heard a lot of concerns, all of them important, and the commission will take them into consideration. The commission doesn't need to hear the same thing over and over again. It doesn't add anything to the record that we must consider tonight. So thank you.
Good evening. My name is Betty Greenewald. I live in Lakeside, Potnets. The commission is wrong when they say Long Neck Road will not experience any further traffic. You cannot, from April to the end of October. Right.
We didn't say that.
No. Denra.
Oh.
Okay.
How about Delta?
Delta.
There we go.
You cannot come out of Lakeside, hang a left, and go up to the Food Lion. You have to hang a right, go down to Massey's Landing, come around, go all the way back up to Food Lion. You can get back into Lakeside pretty easy because you're going in the right direction. Behind my house, I have an 8-foot fence. And behind that fence is a 6-foot chain link fence. That separates me from a stick-built community. Anybody who wants to come over that fence has a pretty tough job. Does it bother me to look out my back at a 8-foot wood fence? Not in the least. It keeps them out. It keeps me out. And, I'm sorry, a split rail fence with some bushes in front of it or bushes behind it isn't keeping anybody out.
Can we all agree that the split rail fence is not going to keep anybody out? All right. No more about the split rail fence. Good enough. But thank you very much for your comments. Okay, who's next? All the way in the back here. There you go. Yeah, you with a whatever it is you're wearing. Yeah, there you go. With your hoodie. The man with the hoodie.
Good evening, gentlemen, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I have a concern for the building of this property and the use of the land.
Have your name, please.
My name is Tom Hinderleiter. I live in Bayside, Potnets.
Okay.
And the use of the land for a temporary basis doesn't seem to make it or gel with the surrounding community. The impact that it could have, perhaps on our sewers, if you go down Long Neck Road in the summertime especially, and I think I won't reiterate this further, it's congested. Labor Day is enjoyable if you live there, but don't try to get out. Could you imagine 367 more cars using Long Neck Road? I can't. Can you imagine 367 spaces that perhaps have recreational type vehicles, say your ski-dos, your boats, and what have you? The people in Rehoboth Shores have reiterated they barely have enough facilities for themselves. And now this management or whatever they are going to put 367 more places in there to drain on the facilities in the area. Look at Massey's Landing itself on any given nice weekend. You can't park down there because of the boats that have been put in. And you're going to throw 367 more potential boats or ski-dos? It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. The safety, there's problems there within the communities itself. They've spoken about it. To raise a family there, I would say, is kind of tough. I know of one family in particular that live in Rehoboth Shores. It's very tough. For us that are retired, this is ridiculous. That's all I can say. I'll reiterate that. On the electrical side, do you ever have those beat the peak? Well, what will that do to us? What kind of drain will that be on our electrical facilities that are in the area here? I think that the people that are proposing this ought to pay more attention to their facilities and upgrading it, as opposed to bringing another nightmare and draining the people around that area. Gentlemen, I submit to you, please don't approve this. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, now we'd like to hear some different things now. We've heard all about traffic. We've heard about the fence. We've heard about a number of things, but let's go to something different. If you got something different, come on up. You with your, yeah, right there. Somebody get up and come. There you go. Good job.
My name is George Pilla. I have a home that I occupy occasionally in White House Beach. Barring everything that's already been said, and without going into every particular item, I just want to say one thing.
Okay.
Close your eyes and picture out your picture window in your own house 387 different colored tents that they're cooking in and 387 campers parked there, and ask yourself if you'd like to see that every day for only 7 months a year. End of discussion.
All right, sir. Okay, yes, sir. Yeah, with a gray sweater. Well, you're doing good. You're doing just fine.
Good evening. My name is Chuck Kolodzeski. I'm from up in Kent County, and I live in a mobile manufactured home community, and have been there, will be 25 years in April. Well, the thing I haven't heard here is 367 RVs, tents, whatever, with people coming down here, many are going to be in a party mode. There's going to be noise, there's going to be incidents, and then nobody's mentioning the drug problem. I don't care where you go on this earth today, drugs seem to get in there. If this type of community is put in place, it's going to be the beginning of a humongous cancer throughout Sussex County. It's going to spread up into Kent County, and there's going to be problems compounded. I lived in a seashore community in New Jersey, Manasquan, Point Pleasant. You might have heard of them. And the group rentals on the weekend, forget it. With the noise, the police sirens, the arrest, and this is what's going to happen down here. You can count on it. Thank you very much.
All right, sir. Thank you. Anyone with something different? Yes, ma'am, right in the front. You've been very patient. All of you have been very patient.
Hi, I'm Bobby Hemrick. I live in McNichol Place in Lewis. And thank you all for your patience. You've all been very patient with us this evening. I'm not going to go through everything that I had jotted down. I would address, though, that the engineer here spoke to the number of campgrounds his firm has developed. That's a far cry from developing one inside an existing manufactured home community. They're two very different things. The other campgrounds usually were in existence, and then they evolved into manufactured home communities. This is the exact opposite, and it doesn't work. The other thing that concerns me greatly is the fact that residents in manufactured home communities have background checks, very extensive background checks, before we can purchase or move in. If you have an RV section that's added, they're not going to have those background checks.
Good.
And what kind of an element is that going to bring in? My last concern is that this would set a precedence that none of us want to see. That's it for tonight. Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Okay. Yes, sir. Something different.
I have my name is Al Burns. I live in Long Neck area. I live in Mariners Cove.
Okay.
I just have a little twist on something that I'm seeing here. Manufactured home communities have certain amenities within them. Some have more than others.
True.
In the instance of where I live, we have a pool. It's kept pretty well, but we have to pay. But it's for the residents of the manufactured home community. And we're talking about a number of amenities that exist in this place. I don't really have firsthand knowledge of the condition or quality of them. We have a pool, we have a community center, you have a marina, and they were for the residents of the manufactured home community. Now, they're talking about developing some of the unused land that they own within this community. And it sounds like they're going to put in something that would be basically a separate entity from the manufactured home community. Yet at the same time, they're turning around and saying that all the amenities that were put in for the manufactured home community are now going to have to be shared with part-time residents. And I just really have a question about what the legality of that is actually and how they plan to get away with it. Thank you.
All right, sir. We thank you. Anyone else have something different? Okay. Anyone on the commission have any questions? All right. Before we close the public hearing, I want to thank all of you for coming out. You were reasonably well behaved, and you were all very polite in your comments, and we appreciate that very much. There are good people on both sides of every issue. We are all kind of interested in the same things. We just maybe have different views of how we want to get there. And it's our job to sort that out, and we will do, we promise you that we'll exercise our best efforts to do that. Now, when I say we're closing the public hearing, you're all going to get up at one time. Before you do that, though, we want you to raise your hands. We're going to count who's in favor. Shouldn't take too long. Okay, all right, and okay, who is opposed? Counselor, if you would.
One hand only.
One hand only, and you have to keep it up there because he's a lawyer, not a mathematician. Okay. Come running in from outside. Okay.
We have lost a few that walked out.
I know. We realize that some people left, and we'll take that into consideration. 50. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Around 50. Okay. And when you get up, you're all probably going to want to start talking, which is very natural and normal. But we have four more public hearings to do this evening. Okay. So what I'm going to do is we are going to close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office tomorrow. And I would ask you, if you are leaving, if you would do so quickly and quietly, and we will adjourn for 5 minutes.